solamente hacemos esto a primera hora porque te amamos. Your attention, please. David Lee Roth, first thing in the morning. We only do this because we love you.
Suena, baby. Limp on over here. We got the broken hip cha-cha here tonight on Rockers with Walkers. keep the music going there. It sounds like somebody's limping around the stage. Here we go. At least it's not the rhythm section. Now, you saw, in contrast to the Cream concert, right? You saw the U2 concert. Stan, did you see U2 play?
No, I didn't.
What did you see? How was the U2 concert, man?
I'm a huge fan of Cream, number one, and I'm a huge Clapton fan, but U2 was undeniably greater. The sound quality was greater. The energy was greater. They were still into it. Not for a second did you think, wow, this band is washed up, or these guys are just mailing it in.
U2's been around a long time, too. They've been around since the late 70s, early 80s, right? Even Bono even had a mullet. Oh, never a good
like Mr. Stan over here. I thought you were a hockey player.
It's never a good time to bring up Bono's mullet, especially now that he's saving the world. He's doing a pretty good job of it, huh? And you say the sound was good out there, too.
Great sound at U2, absolutely.
Okay, now I see a call already up here that says Mick Jagger is no good anymore. Before we get to that, Queen is putting out an album, right? And they're just going on tour. Are they playing in New York, Hutch? Did you see the schedule there?
No, not yet. They're playing in Buffalo, and that's about as close as they get. They are playing in Cleveland.
Hello, Cleveland. They're circling. They're looking for the trend. No. They're going to wait until the album comes out, and then they start the ads and everything. Are you a Queen fan, Stan?
Yeah, I like Queen.
Okay. How are they going to be with Paul Rodgers singing? Because that's another guy. That's somebody else from Bad Company and Free. And,
yeah, you know. I know. I cannot see them doing Bad Company songs, which they're doing.
Well,
They do Bad Company songs as well. He does a whole slew of them. Yeah.
With the Queen guys playing in the background.
No wonder the
bass player passed on going out on the road.
Yeah, that's what I was wondering, like, why he didn't do it. And after hearing, you know, and watching the DVD, that's probably one of the reasons.
It's Hamburger Helper.
It's like, you know, they killed the sanctity of Queen, you know, by doing Bad Company songs.
I think they'd be better off doing a greatest hits with greatest friends of some sort.
Well, that's the whole thing. I don't think they should have used the Queen's name in vain, you know?
I don't know.
No, I'm serious, you know?
When Jimmy Page played with
David Coverdale, they didn't call it Led Zeppelin, they call it Coverdale Page.
There's some such.
When he did the thing with, matter of fact, he played with Paul Rodgers, and it was called The Firm.
Okay.
It wasn't
now,
called Led Zeppelin.
Should they have called it Van Halen with Hagar in the front?
No.
What should they have called it?
Well, no, actually, no. Because Van Halen is Eddie's name, you know, that's their name, so I don't see, you know, a difference in them, you know, with Hagar using the name Van Halen.
Okay, what about putting both songs on a greatest hits?
Okay.
when you mix them together and you go one guy, then the other guy, then one guy, then the other.
Yeah, that's a touchy subject.
You know what? It's like being married to somebody. You change your maiden name to the married name, and then you marry somebody else, but you keep the name of the first husband.
I think there's a truth in advertising issue there, totally. There's a complete issue there. Nevertheless, are the Stones still good?
Yeah, well, when they play in tune, you know.
But maybe playing in tune is what makes them the best. being out of tune, she's afinado, it means that's a kind of
a... See, you know what it is, Dave? When I go to a concert, maybe because I critique the music more because I play guitar. So, like, I know, like, when a musician's, like, out of tune or they don't sound right, more than, I think, like, the average person that goes to a concert.
Well, certainly, but nevertheless, if you're talking about about somebody like Bob Dylan? How can that possibly be in tune?
Oh,
Keith Richards makes a living out of, it's like your favorite blue jeans. The favorite best part of it are the holes torn in the knees, you know, and the faded parts and whatnot. The Japanese have an expression for that, wabasabi. It means that which is perfect in its imperfection.
Right.
Your favorite dog is not a perfect little thoroughbred. Your favorite dog is the one missing an ear, missing part of his tail, and he wants to chase. That's the Keith Richard allure. Isn't that kind of what makes rock and roll rock and roll?
Yeah, I guess you got a point there.
Now, wait. I remember, did you work the tour when we did Bad Company?
Yeah.
Were you
99.
On? Okay. Every time you get one of these bands, and the guys are in their 50s, and they come out of rehab, never a good time to bring that up. But every band has a guy who now goes to the gym. Think about it, because you can see it. They always cut their sleeves off. And right? You know what I'm talking about. You know, when Kansas reforms, you can tell which one is going to the gym. When Chicago does their reunion, there's the guy, you know, he's been through rehab, and he's now changed his diet. You know, and now it's kind of like when Huey Lewis sang, "It's hip to be square." Huey Lewis is doing, he's the 19th Billy Flynn over at Chicago with the movie, the play, Chicago. I don't know. Do you think he's going to the gym? Is he actually revved up?
He's got to be. He's doing that. Sure.
Broadway's a rough call.
And he's been looking for a new drug for what, 20 years? So. I'd say the gym will do it.
Who would be a better singer for Queen? Who would be good for that?
Actually,
the guy from Wham.
Yeah, right.
George Michael.
George Michael, that's right.
Is he still on house arrest?
Well, there's a point, you know. Now, if George Michael sang for Queen, right, would they have to do that song? What's that song that Wham did? Wake Me Up Before You Go Go? I couldn't see them doing that, you know what I mean?
No, they'd have to do Smoking in the Boys' Room.
Smoking in the Boys? That's Brownsville Station, ain't it?
No, it's an allegation.
Brownsville allegation.
That nearly derailed a career, or maybe perhaps helped to refabricate one, you know. Harmless rock star mysteries, history for all the wrong reasons.
And we're back to sex offenders.
I don't know. Somebody says Jagger's no good anymore. I don't know if he's still on the phone there. Looks like line 8. Give us a call, 866-313-3733. Rockers with Walkers. Are you on or are you gone?
Yes, I am.
Hey, Rob, how are you today?
Hey, how you doing?
Go for it.
You said middle-aged rockers, but they haven't been middle-aged in, I don't know, for 10 years now. And
The Rolling Stones haven't been?
None of these bands. But I saw the Rolling Stones with the Foo Fighters. And, you know, Mick Jagger and Keith Richards look like they're out of a Thriller video. They look terrible. And Mick Jagger's
okay. Sorry.
I mean, he's got to run back to center stage every time the singing comes on to see his teleprompter. And it honestly, it really wasn't that good, especially for the price. Same thing with the Cream.
How much did you spend for a ticket to go see that show?
Let's see, this was like 5 years ago too, and it must have been like $100 or more. And for like nosebleed seats.
And nosebleed seats, so you were all the way up in the back. And do you think they were playing tape, or were they playing live?
They might have been. I'm actually not even sure. I mean, they
do you care?
Playing live. I think those Stones are playing live.
Do you care? Do you care if people are playing live on the stage or if they're playing tape?
For $100, they better be playing live.
Including the acts that are just totally visual. Do you care if Britney Spears is tape recording or if she's singing?
I don't mind for that at all. I mean, I think she should be singing, but I don't really care about the music. And actually, even if she's lip syncing it, I think that's fine. But you know, if you're paying $100 for the Rolling Stones, I think they should be playing live. I mean, they're a band.
I think there are certain bands that you care about that have that credibility that they actually play. But I want to share with you that most of them are lying to you. Every time you go see a rock band, they're triggering something in the background. When you hear vocals that don't alter, it's the same volume all the way across the board. They're triggering. And the idea that Ashley Simpson got caught doing something that Aerosmith doesn't do is a little bit foolish to me. What do you think about that?
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. Most of the bands, like you said today, they use what they call that, triggers and
sure, they're sampling and triggering
sampling,
and so forth.
Right. Right, I know ZZ Top does that a lot.
Oh, ZZ Top uses it even on the drum sounds, you know? Sorry?
Motley Crue's doing it.
Everybody does it because they can't hit the notes anymore. Right. They can't hit the vocals. They don't have the background stuff. So they're depending on that. And I'm wondering if it even matters anymore. Do you really care? Can you? If you can't tell, do you care?
No, I don't think so. Because as long as the show goes on and, you know, and they're sounding good, why not? You know? If it's part of what you hear on the album, you know, and that makes it, and they can't do it live, you know, I don't see any problem.
So you just play your tape and go stand there?
Yeah.
I heard that, you know, Ashley Simpson got sick in Japan or something like that, but her show went on as scheduled anyway.
Number nine, what do we have here? Number nine, Mark, tell us what's on your mind.
Hey, Dave, how you doing?
Extraordinary. What's cooking?
Yeah, I got to tell you, man, I've seen a couple bands that have changed lead singers. Good example would be Journey. I've seen Foreigner, and I got to tell you, man, awesome shows. I mean, if you were to see Steve Perry sing now, he can't sing like that anymore. A good example would be, I don't know if you guys saw the Chicago White Sox ticker tape parade, and Steve Perry actually showed up and sang Don't Stop Believing. It was horrible, man. And I think this guy from New York came out, nailed the songs. Believe it or not, I mean, imagine seeing Foreigner without Lou Gramm. But I don't know if you guys know this. Lou Gramm is like 300 pounds now. He's in horrible shape. Foreigner came out with this new lead singer called Kelly Hansen. He used to be with a band called Hurricane. Nailed the songs, man. It was an incredible show. I actually went to his, Jason Bonham was playing drums. So I said, you know what, I'll give it a shot.
Is Jason Bonham even still functional? The last I saw, man, he was sloshed.
During the show, it was the anniversary of John Bonham's passing. So Jason Bonham's sitting back there the whole show playing, you know, Foreigner tunes. And all of a sudden, the lead singer goes, we're going to do a tribute to John, Jason's father, John. And they played Misty Mountain Hop. And I don't know what happened, if maybe John did or Jason did a couple snorts backstage. But he came out and just absolutely kicked ass. It was just like a clinic and play. And I'm actually a drummer, so...
Okay. I completely disagree in terms of... I disagree in terms of truth in advertising. That a band is not like a football team. You follow? When you have four people or five people, there's certain members that you can change, all right? You can change the bass player, perhaps. You may even be able to change the drummer, but there are certain first voices. You can't duplicate a human voice. You can't duplicate somebody's lyric writing capacity. And guitar playing is as signature as a human voice. I can hear a Hendrix tune that I've never heard before, ever, and go, I know who that is.
Right.
You know, I can hear a song that's sung by Rod Stewart from the past that I've never heard before, and instantly there's a signature sound to it. Ah, that's what you got. To be first of a kind is preeminent. Everybody else gets the younger brother's inheritance. And those younger brothers will spend the rest of their career doing everything they can to get attention. Do you follow? Mm-hmm. And this is what happened with my band. And granted, you know, there are different approaches to different kinds of music. But I think that also it represents who you were at a certain time period. You know, you attach it to here's where I was in school. Here's where I was in my career. Here's where I was incarcerated. And then, you know, from there, you attach those faces. I think that's probably why Van Halen went on to sell exactly half as much once they started to change singers up. Who was the other singer that tried to be with Van Halen? Do you recollect?
Oh, the guy from...
That lady?
My point entirely. Concert ticket prices. Rick, number 10, you're on. Talk to me, Rick. Are you there?
No.
Looks like he went to actually buy the tickets.
Yes.
Russ, you're here. Number 13. Speak to me, lucky number.
Dave, how are you doing?
Extraordinary.
Great. Hey, I got a comment about what you just said. You're exactly right regarding changing of the singers. One example, if I can use you. You left Van Halen, or whatever the case was, in 85. Your sound, the sound that Van Halen was known for from the first album right up through 1984, went right with you to Eat 'Em and Smile. 5150 came out, boom, whole left turn. Not only that, in 96, when the Greatest Hits package came out, you threw Me Wise on there, and you threw Can't Get This Stuff No More. Two songs that sounded exactly like the old Van Halen, exactly like what David Lee Roth did, and sounded nothing like what Van Halen did since your departure.
Well, Sammy, exactly right. Sammy maintains that at the age of 15, he was kidnapped by aliens, and this is true.
So did L. Ron Hubbard.
No, that's he just wrote it. No, Sam is Sam maintains that he was kidnapped by aliens. So routinely, this is going to change his lyric writing capacity. Do you follow what I'm saying? He's coming from a whole different background there.
Oh, yeah, yeah, I get it. A lot of his songs continue.
So are you saying they shouldn't have gone under that name? You changed the name, correct?
Absolutely. And, if you know, it's just you were Van Halen, as far as I'm concerned. The sound went with you. A friend and I, who are diehard fans for years, were just emailing the other day. I made this very point to him. You bring it up this morning. It's just perfect timing. And I just said, man, I wonder, I said to my friend Kevin, I said, I wonder how much great music they would have put out had that 1996 reunion, you know, continued on. And because based on Me, Wise Magic and Can't Get This Stuff No More, God, those are two killer songs.
I don't think there was ever any intention to have a reunion there. I think they were just trying to prop up a sagging project there, bring me in, and move on to what inevitably turned out to be another sagging project. I think it's truth in advertising. We're going to talk, somebody wants number eight, Jennifer, talking from Philadelphia. Are you there?
Hey, Dave, it's good to hear you on the air. We're happy to have you.
So what are you thinking this morning, Jen?
Well, I just recently saw Rod Stewart in concert in Reading, Pennsylvania.
Yep.
And it was phenomenal. The sound was amazing. It was absolutely live. And he's a guy who certainly kept up for his age. And he played a lot of old stuff and a lot of new stuff. And it was just a phenomenal concert. The whole place was on its feet the entire time. It was fabulous.
Did he play the old stuff or did he play the new stuff?
Both. Both. Half the concert was the old stuff, and half the concert was the new stuff with an orchestra and everything like that.
And is he playing with tape, or is he playing a real band?
Real band. Absolutely live the whole time.
I kind of doubt that. Again, you know, I'm bringing up the issue of a couple of issues here with these bands, because virtually every single one of them is using triggering. Anytime you see more than one keyboard player up there, then they're using the electronics. The question then is, do you care? If it looks good and it sounds good to you, do you care? Or is there a credibility issue?
Well, I guess I thought you were talking about, is he singing live? And that's really more of my concern, is I want to see Rod Stewart. I want to hear him sing. In terms of the instrumentalist, I guess you have a point there, but I don't know, how do you tell in the audience if it sounds fantastic? You know, I don't know much about the electronics and music and technology, but it was amazing.
I always learn that if it sounds good, it is good, but a lot of people have trouble with that. Number 12, Bart, talk to me about what's on your mind.
Hey, what's up, Dave?
You, go for it, Bart.
Listen, you were talking about Queen with Paul Rogers before, and I think it's important to note that they're... that tour is billed as Queen and Paul Rogers, and they are playing Bad Company songs because Paul Rogers, as a vocal entity, you know, deserves top bill alongside them. And they put out a double live album that came out a month or two ago, and I was a little surprised that you hadn't even checked it out, because Paul Rogers doing old Queen songs...
You know what? Paul Rogers doesn't even come close to standing on the top billing level of Queen. If you put his name out by himself, what would he sell? 600 tickets per? No, this is somebody strong-arming the band there. This is a rock band who wants desperately to go out and play. You can see it in the guitar player's eyes when he's at the award shows. You can see it in the drummer. You hear it in their ambition. They want to go out and play. They want to do what they signed up to do early on in life. And here's a guy who's putting the arm on him, with probably his management leading the way, and saying, no, no, this is a famous voice. This is famous. Oh, come on, not even close. In terms of the impact on our culture, in terms of the kinds of music that these guys made, Paul Rogers has one, two songs that anybody else can remain. Queen is like My Country, Tis of Purple Mountains, man. You don't change the words to that. I think somebody put the strong arm on some guys who just really wanted to go out and have a little good time, much like myself.
David Lee Roth.
Panic and disorder. Looks like my work here is just getting started. Roth Radio, New York, broadcasting all the way to Philadelphia, Dallas, Texas, Boston, Cleveland, Pittsburgh, West Palm Beach. I think we actually got a call from Yakima this time. What do you... It's like a Marx Brothers routine. Have you ever been to Yakima? On the way to Nacogdoches. Yes. Is there actually a Nacogdoches, Texas that still exists? I'm sure we'll be broadcasting there. 866-313-3733. Finishing up on a basic subject here, truth in advertising. When they switch the singers in the bands, is it still worth the exact same amount of money? Lynn, when was the last concert that you went to? What was the last show that you went to?
That would be yours, Dave.
That doesn't qualify. Come on. All right. How about fake live albums? Number 13, Patrick. You have a concern about fake live albums. What do you mean by fake live albums? Refresh us. Go.
Hey, how you doing, David? Love the show.
Thank you.
Yeah, I'm a drummer in a rock band, and I've been playing in bands, you know, for many years now. And you know, when you go out and you buy a live album off the shelf, I think there's a lot of false advertising there, because when you want to hear a live album, you want to hear a live album. You don't want to hear all this double tracks and triple tracks and all this fake stuff they do behind the scenes to make the album appear to be live. When, you know, I'll give you a good example. You know, I was a big Kiss fan growing up, and when Kiss Alive came out, you know, they billed that as a live album. And then you found out later, years later, that, oh, you know, Paul Stanley and Gene Simmons, they did a lot of studio work. And
no, they didn't do a lot of studio work. They completely revetted the thing. There was more plastic work done on that than
Wilderstern.
than Jessica Wildenstein or whatever. Absolutely. You start with, all you do is you go back to the bass drum. And the bass drum is what keeps the rhythm, and then you rework everything else around it. You go into the studio and you add a track of audience. You add reverb so it sounds like it's in the building and whatnot. And no, it's not really, it's even better than the real thing, perhaps. I don't know. I wonder if people actually care about this anymore. Because I'm coming from a generation when that reality was important. You had to really be able to play it live on stage. And today, a lot of the new music is just based on visual, which is okay. Hey, Sonny and Cher were based on visual. Okay. So do you care if Britney is triggering and sampling? Do you care if Lindsay Lohan is triggering and sampling? Do you care if NSYNC or Justin Timberlake is triggering and sampling? Although I saw Justin Timberlake open up for the Rolling Stones on that the SARS benefit up in Canada, okay? And he kicked butt completely and totally, man. Completely.
Okay, but I don't consider them a band.
I'm sorry, what'd you say?
I don't consider those people you just mentioned a band. I'm talking about, you know, the rock band. When they get up there on stage, that should be live, because you're paying money to go see a band play live.
But live today involves a guy playing with the wheels of steel. Live today means a kid in a beanie with a nose bolt and a tongue ring playing two turntables and playing stuff like this in the background, you know? It's like, what do you think, Stan? You're a classic fan.
Well, I guess that's part of their show now. If he's spinning the records, you know, like, you know, Justin Timberlake, you know, that's part of the music.
He's using it exactly like an instrument.
Yeah,
okay,
exactly.
We used to say a turntable was only a good instrument if you used drumsticks on it, but I disagree. I think you can sample all kinds of other people's material into there. That's not really the issue. I think the issue is, if you need help singing, is it okay to do that? What do you think? Yeah.
I don't have any problem with that.
If you went to the opera, would you have a problem with it?
I'd never go to the opera, but no. And I bet they would. That's got to start happening soon too.
Yeah, I think it's technology. You know, the more the technology that's available, if you could use it to your advantage, why not?
You know what's happened now is my generation spent decades trying to improve the sound of music. Improve the sound of the stereo. Get a better amplifier. Get a better set of Koss headphones, the $850 ones from Europe. Get a better needle on your turntable, right? Get a better. And today, it's not that.
Yeah, but what about Hendrix, too? Like, you know, he invented so many different sounds, and they were inventing technology, different devices for him to use.
They said it was wrong.
So imagine if he was around today, what he would be using.
He'd be using kids who would sample and use things that you'd spin back.
Yeah, exactly.
Because back then, you couldn't make guitar sounds that were distorted. That was considered improper.
Right. Yeah.
Okay, let me see what I got here. Number 9. Give me up. He's talking about the same subject. Scott, are you there?
Yeah. How you doing, Dave?
Good, brother. What's up?
Yeah. See, if I pay money for a ticket and I go to the show, I want to see them mistakes. I want to see that fun that you guys have on stage. You know what I mean? If they're just going to record it, you can just get cutouts, stand them in front of a mic, and play the tape.
Much like Pink Floyd for The Wall that I paid $80 to see back in the 70s? Because it was a great show. It was a great show. I saw The Wall and I saw Animals, okay, at Anaheim Stadium. And it was all pre-recorded. To this day, one member of that band could walk up to me at O'Hare Airport in Chicago and I would hand him my luggage. I wouldn't know who it was.
But you know what? This guy's making a good point, that to see the mistakes and stuff, it adds a danger element to the show, and I'd want to see that too.
Yeah, it's like more of a adrenaline rush,
that's
you know?
Right.
Sort of like when Guns N' Roses were at the top of their game and it was nothing but a series of mistakes. And you, and you waited for a song to break out.
Dave, how much lip syncing do you think goes on?
Say again?
How much lip syncing do you think goes on at some of these concerts?
Tons, tons and tons and tons. Because you can tell instantly is that if the voice is exactly the same volume all the time, that's not technically possible if you're singing live. Anytime you move your mouth away from the mic, guitar sound comes in or keyboard sound comes in. You hear how my voice is changing? But if it stays just like this, especially if it's a slow, quiet song and it never changes the volume, because when you're moving around, then all of a sudden it's going to move from your mouth like this, you follow? And you're also going to... You're going to hear all that kind of breathing from moving, running around the stage, etc. When you don't hear breathing and the volume stays exactly the same, you got Memorex, homie. Roth. 866-313-3733. Or does it not matter? Like Mr. Fisher said back in Theory and Orchestration at Pasadena City College, if it sounds good, it is good.
But now they're doing things too, like Billy Joel and those guys are lowering the keys that they play in. So they will hit the high notes, but it's a different key.
Can you tell if it's a different key?
Personally, I don't really care.
You can tell the difference?
I can tell. I'm a big Fleetwood Mac fan, and I could tell when Stevie Nicks isn't hitting the notes. You know, I mean, the song just sounds, the inflections in her voice, the song, the, you know, how it goes, sounds totally different.
But yeah, plus, if I can now sing along, then I know they've changed the key.
Exactly.
Well, Dave, what about the guy was talking about, you know, he wants to see all the mistakes and everything now. What happened with those guys that they used the tape for their vocals?
Milli Vanilli?
Yeah, and they got caught live on stage when the tape... malfunctioned.
Sure,
something.
That's classic. All right.
Yeah, so, you
classic.
Know.
But they won a Grammy for a performance, okay? They won a Grammy for a vocal performance. I think that they didn't actually do. I think that's very different than if you change something on stage. Hey, if you're Madonna and you're throwing yourself around with great abandon, right, you're going to run out of steam aerobically before the third song. Okay, so now you have a choice. Do you want to do all the great choreography and the lights and the sword dance and the triple backflip, or are you going to stand in one place and execute the song like Pavarotti or whatever? Frankly, if I'm sitting out in the audience and it's her, I don't care. She can trigger anything. She can sample whatever, because it's more about the eyes than the ears. If I go to see Cream, you better play it live. There's three guys up there, and there's no reason you can't play the hell out of that stuff all the way up until Uncle Manny's age. If Uncle Manny was a guitar player and he's 86, would he whip or would he rip? Come on.
Yeah, look at Les Paul. He's
Freddy Krueger.
90 years old. He plays every Tuesday night.
He's up
and he's ripping it away.
Up in Iridium. And he even talks about his, he's got, what do you call it? The little
arthritis.
Little arthritis,
right,
in his hands.
But he still gives a show.
He makes it happen. Number 12. You're on, Keith. Talk to me.
Hey, David, how are you?
Smoking.
You're up. David, you know what? A lot of these bands today, the bottom line is what it comes down to is money. I mean, I went to go see Styx years ago. I saw Journey. And when they replaced their lead singers, I refused to buy the tickets. And the bottom line is, if same thing with you, with Van Halen. Van Halen kept the name because if they changed the name, they would have lost 75% of their money. They would be out today.
Well, you know, a name is a very important thing. I always wonder, if the Ancient Mariner was called the Old Sailor, would they have sold as many?
That's right.
It's sort of like when there's a problem and somebody falls off the roof in Los Angeles, they stop calling it the SWAT team and they call it Special Services.
Now, with people like Britney Spears and them, I mean, that's a different era, like you were saying earlier. Britney Spears and Jessica Simpson, she sings great. I think Jessica Simpson's got a great voice. And I believe she sings live, but I don't know. Who knows?
Didn't she make
Britney Spears and them, these kids, I don't think they care whether they lip sync or not. They go to see the show. They want to see them dance and enact, and they just want to see them live.
I don't think they even care about singing. Have you ever noticed in these reality series with the Simpsons and with Ozzy? Get ready on that track there, Hutch. We'll play that track here, because I'm going to give you a taste of a real female voice here. And this is something that comes out of the early, early 70s. Have you ever noticed on those reality series that there's never any music playing in the background? When Ozzy is in that palatial mansion, No music. No stereo is ever going. During The Simpsons, Nick and Jessica, whatever. You notice in the background, never. No radio is playing. Nobody's listening to records.
Why do you think that is? Do you think it's a clearance thing? Or
no,
what?
No, it's because they're not musicians. They use the singing as being part of an entertainment factor, okay? But if you're a singer, you're always singing. You're always listening to other people play and so forth. So with that in mind, compare this track from 1970s to Jessica Simpson's boots that were supposedly made for walking. Live in front of your naked steaming eyes. Give up some guitar over there, boys. Yo. Let me hear him play one time, man. Live in the studio, bud. All right, here's the special of the day. This one's the special of the day. Everybody suited up. We're going to take the calls on this one. 866-313-3733. I've been saving this because we're getting into prime time here. I'm going to read the story, okay? Make sure that we're all on the same wavelength because this is important. All right. Steven Spielberg pressured Kathy Griffin. You know Kathy Griffin, right? She's our comedian. Steven Spielberg pressured Kathy Griffin to issue a public apology after the comic joked during an appearance at last year's Golden Globes that 10-year-old actress Dakota Fanning had entered rehab. That sounds like a pretty good grist for the mill anyway. Griffin said lawyers for Spielberg, who directed the pint-sized Fanning in War of the Worlds, contacted Griffin after the awards and demanded that she apologize for the joke. When she refused, Spielberg's legal lackeys warned that she would end up on the powerful director's S list, according to the February issue of W. I already don't like this. I think Steven Spielberg has a lot of bleeping nerve, Griffin told W. I don't care how big you are, you will not trample on me or anyone else's First Amendment rights, and that makes me furious. Griffin, who has drawn the ire of Oprah Winfrey, Renee Zellweger, and Gwyneth Paltrow for belittling them in her celebrity skewering act, recalled Spielberg's power play. She got a call from the lawyers, and she's off the list, and E! Channel says, we demand an apology, and it all sounds like a truckload of bullpucky to me. Turn up the music here, baby. Picking up on the calls, 866-313-3733. Anybody want to lean in on this one? Talk to me. Who is it?
What is it with our politically correct society? I don't get it. Everything's politically correct. You can't say anything anymore. You can't, you know, it's unbelievable.
And what the hell is Spielberg thinking? Because she's going to get so much pub on this now. So much publicity.
That Griffin will.
Griffin. Everybody heard it when she did it the first time, and this had to be 6 months ago.
Oh, well, this was 6 months ago that she made the Dakota Fanning comment?
Yeah.
Why is it in the paper today, Robin?
I do not know.
Oh, maybe she's been Oh, you know what? Perhaps she's been bringing it up again. She brought it up in her Atlantic City.
She's doing it live now because she did it on the red carpet. It must have been Oscars or something. But why he's bringing it up now and giving her all this publicity is something I'll never understand. And who the hell is he?
Who the hell is Dakota Fanning?
Well, there's that. And you know, we all know it's only a matter. What's going to come first with her, the breast implants or the rehab? She's 10 years old. She's probably, you know, can you imagine how out of control this kid is?
Didn't Tatum O'Neill kind of follow on this kind of a track?
She did. I think she's getting it together now. But you know, we were talking about it the other day. Beauty is going to be a real problem for people because of the indulgement. And Dakota Fanning's 10 years old. She's probably got more people than anybody in this room. And
representatives, you mean?
Yeah.
Retainers.
Yes.
Keepers.
Entourage.
Handlers. What's going to destroy her more is this baby taking care of, protecting, whatever.
Yeah.
She's going to grow up learning that nobody can say anything bad about you. Even in show business, that if you become a public figure, that there are people who will silence others. Remember when Chris Rock said something negative about Jude Law? He made a joke about it. I think it was during the Oscars.
Right.
And he said, who's Jude Law? He's in every movie there is, every third movie there is. And he was absolutely correct. And then what happened? Sean Penn, I think, got up on and did his big...
Came out and defended him.
His remonstration and said, you can't say that about Jude Law. He's one of the finest actors that we have.
Right? At least we forget all six movies that Jude Law put out last year. Did he put any fannies in the seats? I don't think so.
Burt Reynolds put out 11 movies last year, and if I made fun of Burt Reynolds, everybody would do nothing but laugh, correct?
It sure seems to me. Not to mention, you know, then Jude Law got into that little thing with the nanny.
No, I don't know. What is that?
Oh, he was dating that super smoking hot Sienna Miller, and gets caught banging the nanny.
She's forgiving him, though.
I'm sure that'll last for
a couple of minutes. But they
were over for a while. Sadie like Frost was his wife. And so he's dating Sienna Miller, and the nanny sells the story to one of the British tabloids, and then, of course, it's all across America,
the point is, who cares about Jude Law? If you're going to make a movie, great. I want to see your movie. I'm not averse. But who cares about you otherwise on the side there? And little Dakota Fanning, welcome to the wonderful world of miracle show business.
That's right. And Steven Spielberg, who directed her in War of the Worlds, you know, she probably went running to him or her people did and said, you got to help us out on this because people now think Dakota Fanning is in rehab, which...
No, I don't even think that. I don't think anybody thought for a second that kid was actually in rehab.
I don't even think that people in Yakima think she was in rehab.
Call us up on this, 866-313-3733. If, in fact, this is true, Spielberg done threatened some people. It's the old Mike Ovitz thing of, you'll never work in this town again. You'll never do lunch in this town again. If, in fact, that's the case, or if you have some information on that, give us a call. Because if it's true, I want to know who died and made him janitor. Hey, let's go back to the day when everybody had long hair and when everybody had hair, when everybody had a beard and everybody was coming out and Scorsese was doing Mean Streets and Spielberg was just coming out of school and Coppola was just coming out of school and all of this kind of grist for the mill would have been a little bit more acceptable. Who cares about what the kid thinks? Come on. There's a joke. You got to get used to the joke. And the idea that we're going to start threatening people on First Amendment rights, didn't Spielberg just put out a number of movies that have a lot of issues there. A lot of people are complaining about Munich. They're saying that the story of Munich is fabricated to a degree, or that it's not real to a degree. And he's going, well, I took some liberties, and I support that.
Yeah, you have to support it. Plus, why would anybody go to a movie thinking this is going to be my history lesson on this?
And why would anybody think that a 10-year-old just got out of rehab? Although in Beverly Hills, that's fairly frequent, isn't it? Hey, isn't that Ozzy Osbourne?
That's Jack.
That's Jack.
You get rehab for your 16th birthday now. It used to be a nose job in Beverly Hills. Now it's rehab.
There you go. Jack Osbourne, I can see being successful. I can see him sitting behind a desk giving people a hard time at a record company in 10 years. He may actually come around. And when you get to a certain age, maybe then there's a reasonable issue about, you know, if you say you just got out of rehab. If people are saying Dave Roth just got out of rehab, well, even I'm thinking that's possible.
Yeah, what's scary to me is, the people in Hollywood who normally would advocate free speech, these people are all getting like tight on this.
Well,
it's
scary. The other thing that's going on here is that no pub is bad pub.
Publicity you're talking
about. It's keeping Dakota Fanning, you know, War of the Worlds. I don't really know what it did at the box office. I know that I saw it and I thought it was a snore.
No, it was a total snore. And there was a lot of screaming and running and then more screaming, but it was good screaming.
And, you know, Cruise is getting a lot of bad pub. And so to keep Dakota in the news and like that, like I said, call me a cynic, but I think that's why this is coming out now.
If she had made the same joke about Tom Cruise, would there be the same issue? Would there be a fatwa issued by Steven Spielberg? Because that's a free speech issue, you know. Nobody's impugning this kid, you know. Everybody knows that that's a joke. And where does somebody who's in the showbiz get off threatening somebody else on that issue, huh?
Well, he seems to be out of showbiz and into, you know, I'm the big daddy of everybody now, and y'all listen to me.
All right, well, let's see what Craig thinks. Number 12, you're on. Talk to me about Spielberg, Craig. Go for it.
Hey, David, how you doing?
Extraordinary. You're up.
I think basically it's a case of Spielberg's Jewish guilt taking over for what he did to Drew Barrymore back in the E.T. days, you know?
What did he do to Drew Barrymore? Go ahead.
Exposing a little girl, you know, very, very young, and he saw what happened to her. There were a lot of jokes made about her back in the days when E.T. was very popular, and unfortunately she became a young a drug abuser, and probably his protectiveness over the whole thing of how Drew got too big, too quick, all those things, and Hollywood trappings, you know, were laid at her feet, and she indulged in all of them before the age of 10, and he probably feels guilty somewhat over that, although he'd never say that. So what he does is he's very reactionary, and, you know, is trying to protect Dakota Fanning all the more from that.
Well, do you think that's reasonable? That's the question.
Not at all. Not at all.
Okay, so you think that Kathy should release her own comment back. Do you think most people would support what you're saying? Or do you think most people go, yeah, she shouldn't be able to say something like that about a kid?
Well, I think that, you know, people need to remember that she's a comedian. And, you know, we're in a very weird time period right now where people can't say, even though we're very nationalistic in saying America's the greatest country, we're moving backwards, and we're moving so far back that I don't think you would be able to have a Don Rickles today.
Well, I think also what's happening is that we misconfused the words liberal and conservative, okay? I'm a liberal. I believe in the popularity. I believe in the function of the crowd, the community, the town, the people, okay? The group together. Remember when communes were the word of the day back in the 60s? Well,
now,
no, I don't believe in communes, but I believe in what's good for the benefit of people, and as opposed to what liberals today are thinking, which is all I, me, and my. And if you're talking about what's good for the group, well, then, yeah, you got to have free speech. You can't have the censorship, and you certainly can't have people who have money threatening people who don't have money. And I'm serious about that. You have somebody struggling out there, a comedian. You add ENNE, and she's going to have to work three times as hard to get a job. You know this, Robin.
Absolutely. But you also think that once your name is out there in the public and you're a star of any magnitude,
you
Dakota Fanning or whatever, that you are public fodder and it comes with the job. And if you're going to take offense at it, then you're in the wrong business.
Open book.
I completely think so. And as far as kids, hey, go ahead, retain a clinical psychiatrist and tell the stage mom, start paying a little more attention to your homework at home. And don't send some big gorilla after us who's going to threaten you'll never work again if you make a joke about this. Hey, kiss this, Steve. Break for the spots. David Lee Roth.